You're listening to Shared Security, a podcast that explores the trust you put in people and technology. Hosted by Tom Esten, Scott Wright, and Kevin Johnson. Welcome to episode 292 of the Shared Security Podcast. And back from vacations and Hacker Summer Camp is myself and my two amazing co-hosts, who I don't think went on vacation, and they were not in Vegas.
Definitely not at summer camp.
No. So I'm on vacation.
You are now.
I took 3 days off.
Oh, wow. A whole 3 days.
This is the first PTO I've taken off all year, which is not a brag, because you should take PTO.
Yes, you should.
My wedding anniversary was Monday.
Oh, congratulations.
24 years, my wife. Well, she's put up with me for 25, but we've been married.
No, that's great. That's great. Congratulations. It's exciting. So what are you doing for your vacation besides being on this podcast?
We rented a beach condo and kind of just hung out at the beach. Like, that's it.
Very cool.
I read a bunch. I played Baldur's Gate 3, which is awesome. Cool.
Is it? Okay. I was going to ask.
Okay. Let's be clear. I'm probably not the right person to ask. I have owned every version of Baldur's. It's kind of like Diablo, right?
Yeah.
I've owned every version. I've been playing it. I'm not playing it well, but I'm enjoying it.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah. Cool. Well, why don't we get started here? Wanted to bring up our first topic, which is back to school cybersecurity. So, as you know, schools are back in session. I just dropped my youngest off to college last week.
We're old.
I'm old, and I'm also an empty nester now. So,
nice.
Yeah.
So we'll just call you Big Bird.
Where's my eggs?
Snuffleupagus is going to visit.
No, I mean, you can, sure. But I have no kids in the house, which is different. But I brought this up because I think it's good to kind of rehash not just cybersecurity for schools, right? I think we know there's going to be challenges with the school districts and various levels of cybersecurity, but you know, what do kids need to know in terms of getting back to school? And especially, I think maybe younger kids that are presented with maybe technology, I mean, outside of their own personal handheld technology, they're given laptops, they're given other things in school. You know, what do they need to know? So,
we've talked about it before, right? Where, you know, especially like in college, you give kids brand new machines, the fastest internet they've probably ever seen.
Yeah.
And less parental oversight than they might have had before. And then you ask them to be safe.
What sites are they going to visit?
this is more of a teach them to make right choices, right? Like right off the bat, you know, they are a target. Two-factor authentication. The basics we tell everybody normally, right? To me, I think that kids should get password safes. They should have the ability to understand why things are good or bad, right? And go there. I lean toward believing that the same security things we tell people in business are the things we should tell kids in school, with one major change. And this is something that I'm glad didn't exist when I was in school. But jobs are looking at social media. Jobs are looking at what they're doing. And I think before you post, right?
That's a great piece of advice.
Yeah,
I completely agree.
We can steal that one from Kevin. Think before you post.
Think before you post. Yeah. Not that I do.
Well, I think post before you click. I mean, there's a couple, yeah. Different sayings there. Yeah.
It is interesting. I know we've been talking to a number of school boards something I learned is in Canada here, at least some of them, fourth grade is when they get, when a child gets their first email address that is not from their parents or their own creation.
That's true.
That's interesting. My kids were both homeschooled, so you know, I don't know what the schools are doing, but fourth grade, huh? But you're right, Kevin,
about password managers. Like, when are they going to learn about those? Because they need them soon.
Yeah, and I think on the school side, I find it interesting. We'll link to an article from CISA about, you know, how K through 12 schools can, you know, do better cybersecurity. And it's the same thing that you would basically tell any business, honestly. I mean, it's, you know, deploy multi-factor authentication, mitigate known vulnerabilities, have a backup plan, you know, incident response plan, implement a cybersecurity awareness program, right? Like, these are the things that schools, school districts should be doing, but just like state and local governments, and we've had this conversation on the show before, right, guys? Like, it's so vastly different depending on where you live, the funding, all of that. It could be totally different.
And the unique thing
to an IT person that works in a K-12, right? They have one of the worst jobs.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, they have no funding to fix stuff, at least around here. Like, I don't know if it's better where you all are, but, you know, the people I know that work in IT and in schools, and they have to work through an odd system.
Yeah.
They have to give access to the kids to get into, you know, turn in their tests, homework, whatever. And they have to have a way to let parents get in, right? I know, you know, when Brenna went to school, because Brenna started at public school and then we started homeschooling when I was, because I was traveling and other reasons. But I remember that we logged into the online system and the first thing we did was change the password they gave us, because the password they gave us was like, here's your student ID, which is an incrementing number. And right, like,
yep.
And all the bad things. Yeah. That was her password. Her password was the same as her username. And we changed that. And of course, I talked to Brenna about it and showed her and everything else like that. And the next day we tried to log in and couldn't. And I called the support number, which is always fun. And the person said, well, just use the same password as your username. And I'm like, no, we changed that. I'm like, oh, yeah. At like 1 a.m. every day, they reset the passwords back. And their reasoning wasn't because of, well, security is not important. Their reasoning was it lowered the cost of support because of the number of people who wouldn't know what their password was and had to do all this stuff.
Yeah. It's also really interesting because it's a very unique kind of enterprise, right? What other kind of enterprise gives out accounts to hostile users?
That's a good point. Well,
have you talked to your employees? No. You've got a point, right? The kids are hostile users. The kids and they want to get around the controls. They want to get to the stuff they're not supposed to.
There is another enterprise that I worked with, which I'm not going to name here in Canada, pseudo government, but it's basically where there is a staff that is like an enterprise, but they have to serve a bunch of other people who have accounts, but they had no control over the policies that govern those people. So again, it's kind of a hostile environment. So you have to look at the risks within, you know, the user base.
And just remember that the kids are more than likely they're smarter than the teachers
and the IT staff sometimes.
And the IT staff. So got to keep that in mind.
How many times do you see the latest TikTok thing going viral is a way to bypass a control at school?
Yeah, all the time.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Scott.
Yes, Tom.
Are you ready for our favorite segment of the week, Aware Much?
Yes, sir. It is time for that segment that makes Kevin giggle with anticipation. And today we're going to highlight an article written by Jack Wallen at ZDNet. And it's a simple guide for avoiding dangerous phishing links. So the article points out four things that you can do besides switching from Windows to Linux, which he did mention. it's interesting. I mean, it's his opinion of these things and his discoveries of things that worked for him. But I'll say a little caveat, you know, not all of these things are is what I would call very reliable, but these are the tips that he's given. And I'll make some comments on it. You guys might want to comment on them too, but his number one tip is hovering over links in emails usually shows you, you know, where you're going to go. And that's what we teach people all the time, obviously, in security awareness, but it's actually becoming less true from as time goes on because of, you know, SaaS services. You know, there are companies that use email services that send out email on their behalf, and there might be links, like their newsletters might have rewritten links so that they can track the link usage. So it may not actually reflect the domain of the organization that you expect it to be coming from. That's one of the tips he was saying. You just look for the domain that matches the company. And also there are tools now, security tools from Microsoft and others that are rewriting the links as safe links, right? So it'll show you that it's been scanned and all you see in the URL is safe links / some random number, which really doesn't help if you're trying to teach people to analyze links and look for suspicious links. They're all suspicious now. But actually there is a way you can turn on a special option. I know in the safe links, feature of Microsoft, where it will show you the original raw link as well as the safe links, if you want that to happen. So you have to configure it to be that way. So that's a tip for the IT staff, not your general users. The other things he's saying is you can copy and paste the link. You can right click on the link and paste it into a notepad and see where it's actually going to take you. That sometimes works. It doesn't always work because you might right click and say copy and it only copies the text of like the anchor text for the link. It won't necessarily copy the URL. So if it's working for him, that's good. If it works for you, that's great. But if it, you have to be really careful that it's not just copying the anchor text rather than the actual link itself. Thirdly, I like this one. It's just avoid social media links.
Just avoid them.
If somebody sends you a message in social media that has a link in it, just don't click on it. So, I mean, it's actually not a bad, you know, bit of advice. I would say if you're suspicious or if it's not somebody that you trust, then ask them to send you the link via email. And then you can maybe have a better chance of figuring it out. And fourthly, use a service such as Blackbook to look up the link and see if it is actually on a known bad list of links. I don't know about that one. I mean,
it's pretty reactive. Yeah. I mean,
there's always going to be links. There's always going to be new domains that don't show up on the lists for quite a while. So those, the list of tips I would say is interesting, but I wouldn't rely on it.
I think this is, I don't get me wrong. I'm not dismissing the ideas, but I think this is one of those cases where we have an untenable situation and we're trying to figure out stopgaps. The thing that I say has always been don't click, right? That's simple. And people are like, well, how do you do it? And, you know, let's pick on social media, right? I see a friend share an article. I just saw one earlier today where I remember the guy's name. I don't know how to pronounce the guy's name. The head of Wagner, the mercenaries in Russia, was listed as one of the victims in the plane crash that happened, right? And a friend shared it on social media, and I thought, oh, that's interesting. So I didn't click the link. I went out to the news site, and one, it was a headline. Two, I went to it a different way. To me, those are the safer ways to do things, right? Like, use the sites you want to use,
use reliable sites that you know, and if a story looks like clickbait, go find it somewhere else and see if it's really there, right? I was gonna say I disagree with Kevin because he's saying don't click. I was gonna say links click are everything. Life these days, right? I mean, you can't avoid clicking, but you're right. I mean, you can find alternate ways to find the same stories. Yeah, in many ways. You know, it's a common thing that I teach people too, is if you get a notification from a service that you subscribe to, don't click on the link in the notification. Go to your bookmarked version of the site, log in, and look and see if there's a notification there. If there's anything, it should be there. So it's just a way of sort of highlighting how complex these things are. And, you know, it's not easy to always give advice, depending on the context. But with articles like this, you know, they can be helpful, but you have to be careful that they're not being overly simplified. So the sponsor of this segment, ClickArmor, does have a phishing course that allows you how to learn how to spot some clues, like links, like sender information and body content, and other kinds of threats as well. So we use proven gamification techniques to motivate people to learn and keep focused on actually absorbing those tips. So this gives results fast, and it's really easy to deploy. So if you want your employees to actually learn how to spot and avoid things like phishing threats, you should ask for a free trial of our Gone Phishing course. And you should also consider joining one of our biweekly cybersecurity awareness forum sessions. We have them every other Wednesday at 1 o'clock. We just had one today. And we usually get about 40 security professionals, all with a passion for security awareness. They want to learn what others have experienced, the lessons learned, and share their thoughts. And it's really a fun, healthy kind of an hour long session where people are starting to gather regularly. So really happy about that. We also take the transcripts from those sessions. We first of all record them, put them on YouTube, but we create a quarterly report that we call the CISO Report on Security Awareness. And we just published our second quarterly report today.
That's awesome.
And so you can go to clickarmor.ca and find out all that good stuff, join one of our sessions and learn about security awareness through others that have done it. So that's it for this episode of Aware Much.
So Elon Musk says users on X, well, formerly Twitter, right? Formerly known as Twitter. I guess we have to say it that way, right?
It's
Twitter. Well, they're going to lose the ability to block unwanted followers. So basically eliminating the block feature, and they're only going to allow blocking through direct message. So this has caused obviously a large uproar on Twitter in the remaining InfoSec community, by the way. InfoSec Twitter, whatever's left of it. There are people there. I mean, I'm still there, and it's still there. I'll just say that the guy that wrote that article, I don't think was correct. If you remember, we talked about that a few weeks ago, but
it's dead.
It is there. So, I don't know. Let me give you my thoughts real quick. So everybody knows though that, and this is not, I'm not defending Elon Musk at all here. Just want to state that, but people create another account and then they follow the person that blocked them. Right. And that's been a known issue for a long time. Right. I mean, you get blocked. Well, I'm still going to find out what you're saying another way. There's screenshots. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Personally, I think a block is one right off the bat. I think the uproar is exactly what Elon Musk wanted. I believe he responded to a post from the Tesla fanboy account.
Oh, it's one of those Tesla fanboy accounts.
They post something saying, hey, should we use block or mute or what do you, honestly, it felt like somebody used their alt account to post something so that they could do a whiz bang response. Right. But they post something, Elon Musk responds, and the world blows up, right? I'm not saying that they're not thinking about removing the block feature, which would be a huge mistake. I agree with you, there's ways around it.
Yeah,
but I think that there's, for the system to work for the people who use it, block is required. I don't block very many accounts. I think I've blocked three, right? But there are lots of people that put up with a lot of crap, a lot of things going on. I mean, you just see the recent, what was that? Oh man, what was the guy's name who he's releasing TikToks and it's basically Tracer T grown up. Right.
Oh,
and
yeah,
there's noise and people are attacking and all this kind of, blocks are important. That's a feature that, but I actually think that what was done was Elon Musk posted something specifically to get an uproar, specifically to get engagement. And bluntly, based on that engagement, Twitter may or may not actually do something, right? But I think that this, again, is feeding Elon Musk's need for attention, right? That's what I think it was. I think removing the block feature is dumb, but I also think that we went into his game.
Yeah, I totally think that's true. I mean, I disagree with, you know, the removal of blocking features as well. My gut feeling is, you know, people say Elon didn't really have a plan. He just bought this thing and doing random things. I think he probably did plan to do all these things, but he's doing them one little thing at a time.
He has a plan.
And then he lets the storm blow over and people come back, and then he'll do another thing, and they'll, you know, it's going to sustain. I think it'll stay there.
Yeah. I mean, what he's doing is what he wanted to do at PayPal and have this one single app to do everything in your life with. And, you know, he wants to make it the central, you know, media app, the central way of communicating with people and make payments and give money. I mean, he's going to be doing that soon too, is a payment system, like Cash App kind of thing within Twitter. And he's doing the monetization thing with creators. If you just saw that. So if you pay the whatever, $11 a month, which it's kind of interesting, like you're going to pay money to get money, but okay, whatever.
All seriousness, does that not read exactly like the scam? Hey man, I have this opportunity for you. If you pay me $50, you're going to get 300.
Yeah.
I swear.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's every get rich quick scheme, right?
Well, and it makes sense because people are going to sign up for it and they're just not going to hit the thresholds to, just like on YouTube, it's really hard to get like to hit the threat. I mean, we've had this YouTube channel for forever, and like we're now just about to hit 1,000 subscribers, and like, I still am not even close to meeting YouTube's requirements for making money off of the channel.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's betting on there'll be more people like that that are not going to hit the thresholds, and he's just going to collect all that money.
Yeah, so it's not really sustainable.
I mean, that's the argument, right?
Unless you keep getting a new batch of suckers every week.
Oh, there's suckers.
That is the whole point. And no, I'm not. It's not really a Ponzi scheme. I know that. But maybe.
Well, anyway. But yeah, well, we'll see where that goes. But I just find it interesting from a privacy perspective, right? That's, you know, for a lot of people, I mean, regardless of the, there's alt accounts and they can still see what people are doing. It's still a safety blanket in a way for a lot of people that are being harassed or, you know, anything like that. I think it's important. So, all right. Well, that's all for this week, I think, gentlemen. But great to have you both on the show again.
If I may, I do want to
spend a while.
Yes. Yes,
oh, and you have an announcement.
An announcement, yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
I'm running for the board for OWASP, the global board. I decided, I've talked about it before. I've had a lot of people ask me if I wanted to, and I've always said no. And what I've decided is I'm actually going to put my mouth where my mouth is or something.
Great.
So, put your mouth where your mouth is.
What I want to say is, whether you want to vote for me or not, or just want to vote against me, you have to be a member in good standing by September 30th to vote in the election. And one of the main things I'm running on is figuring out how to make membership benefit better to the members, right? Because what amazes me and has amazed me for years is an organization like OWASP that has hundreds of thousands of people a day using the system has less than 10,000 members. The membership, and we refer to it as paid membership, but that includes the complimentary memberships given out to people and things like that. Mm-hmm. I want to say it's like 6,500 people. That's it. That's mind-boggling.
That's small.
And so all the other things we need to fix, we can't fix if there isn't membership. Right. So what I'm going to ask is, I'd love to have people vote for me, but whether you vote for me or not, become a member by September 30th. Like, do that and we'll see what happens. So
Well, next, once you're on the board, the next
step is you're the president. No, I don't think that's
the way it works. Yeah. No? Oh, man.
But then you can create the board-approved recruitment process.
No, we're not.
Right. This is an IC squared, right? Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, we're not going there. All right. Well, we'll have links to that and how to sign up to be an OWASP member in the show notes as well. So, all right, gentlemen. Well, thank you again. And thanks to all of our listeners. And we will all speak again next week. Thanks for watching or listening to this episode. Please subscribe wherever you like to listen to podcasts and visit us at sharedsecurity.net or on X, formerly known as Twitter, at SharedSec. If you'd like to help support the podcast and get early access to new episodes with no ads, plus many more exclusive benefits, become an official supporter of the podcast for only $5 a month. Visit sharedsecurity.net/supporter for more details.